Hello, everybody. This is Ground Zero Growth. I'm your host, Sam Sapp, owner of Lockbot. I'm joined today with my guest, John Hall, public speaker, sales executive at Crux Accelerate, and just an all-around fantastic person, man of faith. John, is there anything else I missed in that introduction?
I don't think so. I'm sure in the next hour or so, we're going to cover a lot of ground, so we'll let you just proceed.
Fantastic. So my initial line of questioning typically kind of lines around, what was kind of your original dream? And let's go back to even kind of the high school era where people are telling us we got to figure out what college we're going to go to. We got to figure out what career path we're going to follow. What was kind of your life looking like in those moments at that time?
Well, let me go back a little even further. I was born in West Texas and grew up there as a kid till I was 12, and lived in a very rural part of the country in the Permian Basin. So it was a lot of oil companies. My parents both worked for oil companies. And then my mom ultimately moved to San Diego, California when I was 12. And we ended up living in Coronado, California, which has ended up being a beach community. So I literally went from riding in rodeos to becoming a surfer. And that was a huge transition for me because it really opened my eyes, my global lens, if you will. Growing up in West Texas is pretty myopic. I didn't really see the world with lens that was global. It was really more local. And then moving to a place where you had people from all over the world visiting, it really opened up my eyes. And then in high school, I played football. I was a surfer, but football was my love. And I really started playing when I was in West Texas and then played in high school. I had a very serious knee injury, which curtailed playing beyond that. And then I had the opportunity to, in my 20s, and I had no idea where I was going to go, what I was going to do. It just, my journey was not laid out at all, Sam. And then I got involved in the fashion industry in my 20s. And then transitioned from the fashion industry on one side of the fashion industry into the business side of the fashion industry, which was really where I was driven. I always wanted to, I'll give you an example. I was interviewed once by American Airlines to work with them, and they basically told me, you seem more like the type of person that wants to run the airlines instead of work for the airlines. So I didn't get the job. From there, I ultimately ended up working in the sports and entertainment industry. I was the youngest professional boxing promoter in the United States. The LA Times did a story about me and my partner. And that's where I kind of got the bug. I was always leaning toward athletics and sports. That was where my heart was. So I tried that. It was a great experience. I did that for a while. And then I ended up really going hardcore into sports and entertainment. And then ultimately got me to Madison Square Garden as a VP, two different VP positions at the Garden and a general manager's position at MSG. And some time with the NFL, some time with the NHL, some time with the NBA. So I was able to go from this West Texas kid that came from a very, very financially challenged background to ultimately being able to listen to dreams that I think most little boys or little girls can only dream of.
Yeah, I kind of want to talk a little bit more about this global lens because it's been kind of a recent phenomenon for me too. We've started to pick up more customers throughout the States and through the course of this, been doing a little bit more flying. And just every time I leave an airport and that town gets tinier and tinier, and those neighborhoods with massive houses just get smaller and smaller, and you see more and more and more of them. And then into another airport with more people just bustling by. It's an interesting thing because you're right. It's kind of an opening moment where it's like there's a lot out in this world. And I think sometimes we pigeonhole ourselves unnecessarily. So can you kind of tell me about what was that? I mean, you said from West Texas to California. Do you remember a particular moment? Was it the plane flight where you're like, this world's big.
Wow, that's a
can't
great
possibly
question
meet
because,
every person.
well, and that's a great question. The very first time I ever got on an airplane was that when we were going to California. I was 12 years old, so I'd never been on a plane. And of course, it seemed bigger than life. And then to leave a relatively small airport and then fly into a big airport in a big city, It really, and I've never really thought about that. That's a great question, Sam. It had to have a tremendous impact on me, because here I was going from being this country boy to going to a place that was a very large city. It was a bit of a transition, though. It wasn't that easy at first, but I do contribute that to part of the success I had from a business standpoint, and ultimately do all the things that I've done. And I've been very, very blessed. I've been able to live a really cool life. I do contribute a lot of that to be able to get out of my element, that West Texas small town element, and ultimately end up in a big city.
Do you think some of the aspects, do you remember, is there some of that personality from the West Texas up to age 12 that you just kind of carried with you throughout your travels? Or is this just kind of a matter of global in general? The more people you meet, the more you're going to adopt some aspects.
There's no doubt there's still a lot of country boy in me. You know, the old adage, you can take the boy out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the boy. Yes, there are certain things I'll say. I'll get teased occasionally. There's certain things I like to eat, like chicken fried steak. There's certain things that really reflect back to when I was a kid and a country kid. And they all creep up, and I'll say certain things that I might could and things like that. West real for Southern kind of nuances and language, but for the most part, it's just occasionally. For the most part, it's a little more sophisticated now, a little more elegant in how I, the words that come out of my mouth, at least most of the time.
So I lived in Houston for about 5 years, and I'm going to be, and I say 3 years, I think is once you pass that barrier in Texas, you like you said, you can't get it out of you at that point. I'm curious, and this is totally way more surface level, but I haven't found a viable substitute for y'all. I tried for forever there. I beat y'all out of myself, only to reintegrate it with time because I'm like, there's not a decent substitute for this phrase that fits. You all doesn't quite work in the same way. And when I'm trying to address multiple people, y'all just seems most natural. Thoughts on that one? Have you found a decent substitute for that? Are you using it at all regularly?
You know what, Sam? This is the fourth podcast I've been on in the last 13 months, and I'm going to be on another one in Denver here in 3 weeks. You've hit me with some questions from the get that are very thought-provoking. You're right. You can only use y'all. There's no substitute for it. I still say y'all occasionally, and I don't say you all. But not very often. And here's the deal. If I'm with somebody that's from south of the Mason-Dixon line and I spend some time with them, it'll start to creep in a little bit. I'll start talking like this, and go West Texas. Not a real deep, drawl, but just that y'all and fixing. I'm fixing to do something. Yeah, that's a good point. I never thought about the word y'all and why there's really not a substitute for it.
So tell me about, so you're progressing through. I mean, you really gave me like a lot to work with. And so I'm struggling with at from the big picture lens, your growth progression. What that's a kind of a rocket, at least in this moment, over a short period of time. And so I'm kind of trying to decide, can you give me kind of a period of time there between California and say Madison Square Garden? What was that span? And what were some of the growth items along the way like how did you deal with imposter syndrome? Have you ever struggled with imposter syndrome where you're like, I shouldn't be in this room. I don't know how I ended up in this room with these people, and I don't feel like I belong.
I'm the poster boy for imposter syndrome. It's interesting that you bring that up, and you've been to my presentation coaching up. I've added imposter syndrome to that presentation now and talk about it and talk about how we struggle with imposter syndrome. I really struggled with it when I got to Madison Square Garden. All the other stuff that I did, I lived in Europe for 2 years and worked for NFL International and was involved in trying to globalize the Shield. And there I felt in my element for the most part. Before that, other ventures in the sports entertainment industry. But once I got to the world's most famous arena, I'll never forget the very first day I arrived as an employee, not when I interviewed, but arrived as employee. I remember looking up and going, "What am I doing? You know, how, I don't belong here. This is the best of the best in this building." So yes, I definitely struggled with it. And you know, you mentioned earlier about, you know, all these different transitions. I lived in probably there were certain chapters in my life. There was a chapter in my life from, you know, when I was a young kid in Texas to the chapter in life in Coronado, California, in my teenage years. My 20s and my 30s was a chapter, very fast paced. As you said, things accelerated. Things moved really, really quickly at a high level, both in sports and entertainment and all the things that I was doing. And then in my 40s and my 50s, there was a whole nother chapter that was a much slower chapter. It was raising children and being active and being present with my children's life. And now in my 60s, it's a whole new chapter. So, but that 20s and 30s happened really fast. I went from being a junior level executive to a senior level executive in a very fast period of time. And I definitely struggled with imposter syndrome because here I was, this kid from West Texas that ended up growing up on a beach, ended up at the world's most famous arena. So I struggled with it for sure. How about you? You?
Yeah, no, I have. I've been getting over it. Actually, it's something that well, I mean, we talked a little bit about faith before we got started. I'd love to dig with it now. It's probably a pretty decent transition because it really feels like it's something that the Lord more directly has been mentoring me through than anyone else in a way that's like it's a small voice inside of me that's like, you know, you think of the story of Jesus Christ. It's like, if I can die for you, then don't you think you're worthy? And my opinion is the only one that matters. And that has really allowed me to, in moments where that voice comes on, and I'd be interested to hear how the voice typically works for me is I'm talking to somebody that, I esteem high caliber and respect greatly. And then I have this moment normally partway through the conversation where it's just a voice in the back of my head that says, "What are you doing? You don't belong here. Run." And in that moment, frankly, I smother it. I just mentally just like, "All right, you're gonna go away. You're locked in the closet. We don't have time for that." But in the context of worship in the church, and you know, it really allows me to bring that back up and address it and recognize it as being a false feeling, a false thing that I don't need to be dealing with. So that's how I've kind of dealt with it. Yeah, there's a you know, there was a moment actually just at Pierrepont the other day in Union Station. You know, that's a pretty fancy diner that
It
I don't
is, yes, it is.
visit establishments like that on a regular. And you know, they don't care what you come in dressed as and what they're going to serve you regardless because that's ultimately what you're paying for. But in that moment when that's not an environment you've grown up in or are used to, it's that weird sort of thing, like, man, they're waiting on me hand and foot, and who the heck am I for any of this? Just grabbing a lunch here at Pierrepont. So, but that's where I'm kind of curious if you remember an instance where you were in a room, and then how have you worked through that, I guess? Is that something you still struggle with? I mean, that's something that still comes up every now and again for me, or do you kind of remember working through it, a moment where you were like, no, I know why I'm in this room.
I think one of the advantages of one, getting older, and two, living a very, very full life, you know, with all the places I've lived and all the things that I've done, it's very, very rare that I'm not comfortable in a situation or feel out of place. I was just reading a thing about authenticity and how what a strong emotion that is. I think because of my faith, and I know we're going to talk a little bit about that. I can just be my authentic self. And I think once you're your authentic self, then a lot of that imposter syndrome and a lot of that doubt, which you will remember from coaching up where I talk about doubt, goes away. And fortunately, I speak to audiences about these things. So I'm reassuring myself all the time and giving myself all this coaching myself, because I talk to a lot of audiences. So I really don't deal with it anymore. I'm very comfortable in my own skin. I've made a ton of mistakes, and I've been very fortunate to have some really cool things happen in my life. And when you weigh all those things, added with a little bit of age, I'm pretty comfortable. Yeah, it doesn't happen very often anymore, but.
Well, and it's funny because it's if somebody were to ask me how you build confidence, it's that, right? The more difficult things we do, the more people we talk to and turns out all right, the more situations we're in that we thought we wouldn't be able to make it through, but we do, the more at the end of the day you get pretty confident about, right?
Right, exactly. And it's interesting. I in my 20s and my 30s, when I was on this rocket ship of opportunities and high profile stuff, my confidence was high, but it was a lot of bravado. I was pretty cocky, and I was that guy. And then through faith, and then focusing on being a dad in my 40s and my 50s, I'm still a dad, but raising children. It transitioned into a confidence that was more in grace. Instead of trying to come across as the real confident guy, I just wanted to live and be that confident guy in love and grace and compassion.
So let's talk about that. When did you kind of first come to the faith?
It was in late August 1999. I was at an event, and I'll share the story with you. We talked a little bit about this earlier. I'll try to condense the story a little bit.
Okay.
At one point in my career, I was a general manager at the
And how
Garmin.
old were you at this time? I don't mean to date you. I'm just trying to get the
I
scene
was 40.
here. 40,
I was
okay.
40. And I was at an event. It was the Arena Bowl, Arena Football, their Super Bowl. It was the arena, their championship game. The night before the event, there was a gentleman by the name of David Baker. David Baker was the commissioner of the league at the time. He became the president of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He was that gigantic guy that people see knock on the door, and he tells people, "You're in the Hall of Fame." He's a huge man. He's like 6'9", 350 pounds. He's got the biggest head I've ever seen in my life. He's gigantic, and he was a basketball player, athletes in action, and he had become a friend over the years, and he was trying to get me to come back to the league because I'd left the league, and so he invited me up to this event, and it was during the award ceremony the night before the game, and there was a young man that got up and spoke, and I could tell something had happened to him. He was very fragile, but he was talking about football, and he was talking about faith, and when he came off the stage, David walked over to me and said, "Hey, John, I'm so glad you're here. Really want you to think about coming back to the league." And I said, "Wow, that last young man that spoke, I said, that was just amazing, his story." And he said, "Well, that's James Guidry. You remember James Guidry?" I said, "The quarterback from the Portland team?" He goes, "Yeah." And I said, "What happened?" And he said, and then next to David was their chief operating officer. And he said, "Hey, John, what happened was he had an injury on the field. He was pronounced dead on the field. And he didn't die, but physically he was pretty messed up." And I said, "Wow, his story was amazing. Well, would you like to meet him?" So David gestures over to James, and James was probably only about 15 feet away from me. It seemed like it took 5 minutes to get to me because he had to move really slow. And David says to James Guidry, he says, "Hey, David or James, I want you to meet John Hall's good friend of mine, and he's a friend of the family, and he remembers you from your playing days." And James looks at me, he sticks out his hand, he shakes my hand, he looks at me in my eyes, and then he goes, "You and I need to pray." And I went, "Okay." Now, keep in mind, this room has got about as much testosterone as you can have in a room. Now, they had opened up the walls, so the bars are all open. All these football people are all heading to the bars. I mean, this is a very heavy testosterone room. And he goes, "We need to pray." And I'm thinking, "Okay, go ahead, do your thing. And then I want to go proceed into the rest of my evening." And he starts praying on me and just saying that, he goes, "I know that you've been working in this man's heart, and he went on and on and on and on. He finishes, I go, "Thank you very much." But I felt this weight off my shoulders, stuff I didn't know I was carrying, throughout my career in the previous, 39, plus years. And I remember that night, I had some colleagues that I was with, and I told them, I said, look, you guys go have fun. I think I'm gonna go up to my room. Keep in mind, no one's going up to their room. And they're all heading to the bars, and I go to the room and I just sit there, and I just felt this light. I felt this not just light and illuminating light, but this light. I felt light. All this heaviness and this darkness off me. And I remember that night, I literally prayed, and I just said, God, I hope I wake up tomorrow and feel like this. And that was it. And the next day I wake up and I felt great. And then I realized that something had transitioned spiritually in my heart. And I think the greatest gift out of that, Sam, was, and you and I talked about this a little before we got on. I don't get on a pulpit. I don't espouse my faith to a lot of people. I just try to walk the walk. I try to show grace. I try to show compassion. I try to show kindness. And that's something you would have seen when I talked, when I shared my coaching up presentation. For me, when I have an audience, if I have the opportunity to be able to share things like kindness and share things like compassion and share things like gratitude, then I'm walking that walk. I don't need to talk it. And there's a lot more, obviously, to the story, but that was how it all happened, and it literally changed my life in such a manner that I ended up leaving the sports and entertainment industry completely and moved to Colorado and focused on my kids, and I got the opportunity to coach all of them, and which was really cool. And the whole house full of athletes, and two of them ended up being Division I athletes, and got really involved in the community, got involved in the schools. And it was now it was a new chapter for me, and it was a much calmer, grace-filled chapter. The most significant chapter in my life at that point. You would think all the high-profile stuff would have been the coolest. It wasn't. The coolest was being this dad and being involved in a community. And so that's a little bit of the testimony, but yeah, I'm in a good space. It feels good.
That's fantastic. I love that talk of the transition and being a dad and how amazing that was, because I think, it's I think sometimes maybe that's taken for granted, or yeah, when I had my daughter, it was like, oh wow, it's things are way more in perspective. Can you tell me about why you felt like you had to leave that?
You mean leave the whole sports entertainment industry and
Yeah, what so you said you felt like you were called to leave that, and I'm more curious because I serve a lot of different industries and I like to talk to a lot of different people, and what I've learned is industries have personalities. So part of this is a question of the personality of that environment, but then part of this is also a question of is there something specific that you felt like it's like, no, this isn't, I need to do this, and that doesn't involve this.
Well, full transparency, at the time, mother of my children left me because I was a workaholic, and I was grinding out 70, 80-hour weeks, and I'd be at arenas and at events. And she moved to Colorado. I'm going to guess that the thought was there's no way I'd ever leave, high profile stuff. And because of what had happened to my heart, I knew I had to move to Colorado, excuse me, and be active in my children's lives. And that was that tipping point, was her taking the children. And in hindsight, it was the greatest thing that could have ever happened to me, because if I would have stayed living that lifestyle, and I don't know if I certainly I don't think I'd be the man I am today.
Wow. Yeah, that's strong stuff. That's fantastic that it's worked out like that, 'cause that's a lot of difficulty in the moment, right? That many people it's start to blame and victim and but in reality in the long term it sounds like it was a series of significant positive events.
It was, being a victim is something that is just not even in my vocabulary. I came from a really tough background as a little kid, so I know how bad it can be. And so all of us, I mean, and you remember from coaching up, I talk about the fact that everybody has stuff and everyone's dealing with stuff. And the sooner we can recognize that the brother and the sister to our left and to our right may be dealing some that's really difficult, and the sooner we can be a soft place to land for them and be that trusted advisor that's willing to help them, the sooner we start developing relationships. And soon as we start really developing relationships, that's when we really start to live, and we start to prosper and thrive in life. So, victim is not in, it's not something that I even remotely think about. So, no, and in those moments when my children were off to go to Colorado, and I guess I could have said, oh, woe is me, but no, it was go and then reinvent myself. At that point, I started a consulting business, marketing and business development and coaching small companies, and a whole new transition. And it worked out okay. I mean, so far so good.
That's so exciting. So tell me about some of the consulting you're doing, and then I'd also love to hear, I don't think that's relevant, but I'd love to hear your transition into Kansas City, 'cause you're a Kansas City local, right?
Yes, I am.
Go Chiefs.
Go Chiefs. When I started the consulting business 25 years ago, I started with small companies. My very first client, Sam, was a street sweeper. Now, keep in mind, I'm going from Madison Square Garden in New York to my first client being a street sweeper. And they were
I
a
know this
small
feeling.
operation that we spun off a couple of different divisions for them that had nothing to do with street sweeping. It was a whole different category of business, and ultimately built that into a $10 million company. And then I got another similar company to theirs, and we spun that into being a like a $250,000 annual company to a $3 million company. And then another one comes along, and all word of mouth. I never
All
went
the
out
co
pitching
over
my
the
business.
course of what time? What timeline here is to
This
the
was
10
from like
million and
two
the
from 2000 to 2005. I was just gaining all these clients, and then in 2006,
And you're growing them substantially then, or you're
yeah,
helping to grow them
we were
substantially
killing it.
then.
We were killing it. It was awesome. It was fun. And then I landed this big association as a client, and that kind of put my name on the map, because if this big association is going to hire this small little consulting firm that seems to be having a little bit of success, and just killed their numbers. It ended up going great. And then I ended up producing a series of workshops around the country, a 21 city tour, where we did this EPA compliance training, and I got $250,000 in sponsorship money for it. And then we charged for the training, and traveled all over the country doing this training. And then again, that put my name on the map for companies. And so companies just started calling, just started saying, how can you help us? How can you help us? How can you help us? And then in 2010, well, 2008, we had the recession, and most of my business was in the construction area, if you will, EPA compliance. And we know what happened in 2008 and 2009 and part of 10. So you were sharing that story earlier about one of the people you deal with. My income dropped by about 80% over the course of about a 3 month period, because all my clients, if you're a consultant, what's the first thing to go? And that was rough. That was really tough to weather that storm. Weathered that storm, and then I decided, look, I'm not going to put all my eggs in one basket anymore. I had them all in that one little niche business. So then I started doing some marketing for a tech company that I still do some work with. And I love this story, and I love these people. The company's called Zoom Grants. It's a software that helps administer the application for grants and distribute grants out. And the difference that we make on a regular basis is just tremendous. I mean, all of our clients that are distributing money out to the billions of dollars is making such a difference in our society. So it just feels good to know that we're making such an impact. And so I've been with that company for 15 years. And then a new transition happened in, let's see, 2015, maybe. I started a company that helps high school athletes get college scholarships. And I started with my own son because he was a top receiver in Colorado, but wasn't getting any looks. And then ended up getting 8 scholarship offers for him. And $500,000 in scholarship money was offered to him. And then I was just doing it to help him. And then a buddy of mine gets a hold of me and says, "Hey, that thing you did for Jackson, can we do that for my son?" I said, "Sure." So we did that for him. And then the floodgates opened up. I was getting calls from all kinds of people. And I think to date, probably 4 dozen different athletes and their families have gotten scholarships and changed the course of their life to find a place to play. I have tabled that business since I moved to Kansas City because I've gotten involved in other things here. But it's again super rewarding, Sam, when you do things like the grant stuff that we do, Zoom grants and stuff we were doing with the young people finding scholarships for them. For me, it was super rewarding because now I get to do things that I really feel passionate about, things that do make a difference in people's lives, and it helps change the trajectory of their lives.
What I want to talk about, so let's dive into the you said your son, he's really good. He's not getting any offers for scholarships. And so you saw a need. I really kind of want to dive into that need because I think, and the idea, the light bulb moment, because I think maybe for some people listening, it's maybe they think it's hard to spot a need, but you're really close and you see it. And tell me about how that developed.
Okay, good question. I had a conversation with my son about what he wanted to pursue because he was a really good lacrosse player too. I said, "Okay, what do you want to pursue? If you want, do you want to, first of all, do you want to compete in college?" He goes, "Yes, I do, Dad." And I said, "What do you want to do, football or lacrosse?" He goes, "Come on." He goes, "You score a touchdown football, you look at the crowd and they're all screaming." He goes, "Football." I said, "Okay." So I hired a recruiter that just it just didn't work. I was really disenchanted. Then I tried this online thing and it didn't work. And then I was getting ready to hire the biggest recruiting service in the country and scratch that $4,000 check to them and have them run with it. And I just didn't feel good about it. I was on a call with them after 3 different calls. They said they had a special program just for my son and specially just for him. And then I a lot of times when I'm on conference calls, I wear a headset so I can hear all the people in the room. Well, I could hear all the other people in the room spewing the exact same thing they were telling me. So I knew it was just a shtick. So I very politely got off the phone and they're really well known. They're the biggest recruiting service out there. And I got off the phone and I sat there and I thought, what am I going to do? My son really wants to play. And I don't feel comfortable with this organization. I've tried other ones. And I went, well, you know what? I worked in the sports business. I've hired coaches. At that time, I'd won 6 Colorado Press Awards writing about sports. That's a whole other story. And I've come in somewhat of a digital marketing guy with all the stuff that I've done with my clients. So I said, I'll try something for him. And then it evolved into what happened. So if whatever your desires are, you can reinvent yourself. I never thought I'd be in the fashion industry. I never thought I'd be in the sports and entertainment industry. I never thought I'd be in the recruiting business for athletes. I never thought I'd be in the software business. I never thought I would write and end up winning 6 Colorado Press Awards. I never thought I'd ever be a public speaker and a motivational speaker. You can be anything you want to be if you just have passion. I mean, really, if you're just passionate about it and you're willing to dive in, you can achieve anything.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's fantastic. So we're in Colorado, Zoom grants, and then you've started up kind of this business for your son, but not just your son, other athletes. It sounds like really a pairing service between the scholarship and the between the need and the want, really. And the
Yes,
so it goes to
yes.
the ideal place, which is what it sounds like Zoom grants is helping with. So that's absolutely fantastic, because I think if there's one crazy struggle in the world, it's as you're an entrepreneur, as you're starting out, whatever you're headed towards your dream, It seems impossible, but the reality is there's so many services out there willing and interested to help. It's just a matter of getting connected to the right folks. So anyway, so you're making that doing all that. How are we in Kansas City now, John?
Well, we got a really fun story to tell. The my I met a woman at a celebration of life in San Diego. Her uncle was engaged to my sister. I knew her uncle quite well, but I'd never met her. So unfortunately, he passed away, and I was back there at my sister's house, and his family was coming over the night before the celebration of life. And so we're all there, and I'm trying to be the big brother and, make sure I'm being a good host. And all the my uncle's children are coming in, then all of a sudden his niece comes in. And we met, and the chemistry was just it was extraordinary. And when she left that night, I thought, wow, who is she? And she told me the same thing. When she left that night, she goes, who is he? And I was thinking, gosh, she's got better stories than I have. And she told me later, she goes, he's got better stories than I have. And 3 days passed, and then we connected on a phone call. And then after that, we connected on FaceTime, and we FaceTimed every night for a year and never missed a night. And or unless I traveled to Kansas City to see her. And then our first actual date, I had mentioned that night in the kitchen where we met that I was going to take her uncle's ashes and drive up to Sydney, Nebraska, which wasn't too far from where I was living in Colorado, about 2.5 hours. And she goes, I would love to go. Can I go? And I come to find out it wasn't only the family's graves, her father was actually in one of those graves. She lost her dad when she was five. So she flew out to Denver. We drove up to Sydney and we found the graves, which was a little bit of a search because she didn't know. She was a little kid, And I'd shared with her before. So this is gonna be a very emotional moment for you. She goes, oh, I know, And once we got there and we went through this whole thing, she spread the ashes. And I was there just to comfort her. It was extraordinarily emotional. She cried, I cried, and from that moment on, we've been attached. So that was about a month in after we'd met after the celebration of life. And then after coming here all the time, often every other weekend, got a lot of miles. She finally said, you just need to come to Kansas. This is, we talk every night. We see each other every other week or even more sometimes. And I moved here. And since I moved here, Sam, it's been like drinking through a fire hose. She is very active in the community. I've worn my tuxedo more in a year and a half that I've been here in Kansas City than I did in 20 years in Colorado. Fortunately, I own my own tux from my old days, and I still fit in it. And she owns a very, very successful marketing agency here in town, and which is probably the transition into the other company she has that I'm helping with, which when you introduced me, talked about. Oh, one
Yeah.
quick note on that. The I gave a present. I gave coaching up my motivational speech to her team on the summer of 22. She had never seen it. She just heard that I work as an MC and I work as a keynote and I work as a public speaker, but she'd never seen me do anything like that. After she saw Coaching Up, she went, oh my gosh. She goes, I have this sister company called Crux Accelerate, which is the sales coaching company, because you'd be perfect to be involved. And that's her right now. She has a special ring. I said, well, we'll discuss it. And about a year later, I finally said, okay, I'll help and let's get involved. I might as well tell you a little bit about Crux Accelerate. It's a
Please,
sister
yes.
company to Crux. Her company is called Crux KC. It's a marketing firm here in town. Her name's Malia McCray. And we're getting married on 5/25/25. So, and
I'm
yeah,
so
it's gonna be,
excited.
well, thank you. And I jumped in with Crux Accelerate. Crux Accelerate is a sales coaching company. We go in and work with companies to not just teach them traditional sales strategies. We do a personality assessment with all the people we work with Insight Inventory that was developed by Dr. Patrick Hanley, who's here in Kansas City. So they have an understanding of what their personality strengths are, what their communication skills are. We have things like how to enhance your LinkedIn networking, how to network in the community, the art of networking, which is something that Malia does at Rockhurst University. We put together a sales playbook. So they walk away with something that's actually something they can onboard with all their salespeople. And then I work with them on just things that are things like EQ. How do we enhance our emotional intelligence? And how do we enhance our relationship with people where we become that trusted advisor? Forget about becoming a salesperson. Become a resource. And once you become a resource, they want to buy your product. Understand that if you can help find solutions for them, we're not trying to sell a widget. We're trying to, solve a challenge we have or they have. I have a, we just landed a new client that is starting here shortly that has 20 salespeople. And they also, I'm going to do coaching up. This is kind of fun too. You've been to coaching up, you've seen me do it. I'm doing it again in 3 weeks at a big conference in Denver. I'm doing it as a keynote for a conference here in Kansas City in November. And then in January, I'm going to do coaching up for the entire staff for the company that we're doing for the 20 salespeople, which is really cool. I love going in and work with go with the entire staff and try to uplift them. I'm going to be doing coaching up for a bank and all their employees here coming up here in Kansas City pretty soon. So anytime we have the platform to be able to make a difference in people's lives, if you look on my LinkedIn profile, you see at the very top says all the things that I do. And the last one is always seeking a sustainable mission. My sustainable mission is to make other people's lives better and to leave the room better. If I can leave a room better, then I've made an impact. And this goes back to our faith. Again, I don't get up and talk a lot about my faith, but I will illustrate my faith. And if I have the opportunity to do that in front of an audience and be that person or one-on-one in coaching, if I have the opportunity to make that difference with that one moment that I have with somebody, then I'm serving as a good steward.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. There's people that administered in my life that I didn't even realize was Christian until kind of like after the fact I told them about my story, and then they were like, "Wow, man." And I was like, "Well, that's crazy, 'cause you've done there was a vendor that forgave debts, and he used the term, "I'm exercising grace," which that I mean could go any either way, but I kind of wondered, and he specifically avoided telling me his stance in that instance, which I think was something unique. And then after the fact I found out, I was like, yeah, Christian, obviously. I was like, oh man, I mean, at the time you kind of sidestepped it. He was like, no, I didn't sidestep it. I was just didn't feel
I
needed.
remember you sharing that story with me when you and I met for lunch, what, about 4 months ago, and
Yeah, it's been a little bit.
you shared that story with me, and I thought that is a beautiful way to show grace, and I can pretty confidently say that he's probably reaping tremendous rewards by showing that kind of grace and that kind of compassion. That's awesome.
Yeah, amen. Wow, so that's exciting. Now I can't help but okay, so we're in Kansas City now, and can you tell me something kind of unique about, 'cause you've been all around, and if we can increase tourism in Kansas City, all the better. Can you tell something kind of unique about Kansas City that you haven't been able to find quite anywhere else that's really stood out to you? I know that's
I
very
think it's
broad,
a,
so
yeah, I think it's a combination of, that's a really good question because I have people I know from the East Coast, the West Coast, some overseas still. And when I moved to Kansas City, they're like, Kansas City? Why Kansas City? And of course, I
exactly.
shared with her. It was, for a girl. But when I share with them, I said, it's a lot cooler than you would think. And then I go into the reasons why. I say one, obviously everybody knows about barbecue here. And, that's kind of the cliche, but the barbecue is tremendous here, and Q39 is my go-to. It's fantastic. Everybody I've come into town, we always go to Q39. The other dining experiences here in town are incredible. You were talking about your dining experience. I've dined at a lot of different places here in town. And it's just, going to places like Farina. And I mean, just, and it, there's just so many. I was one at one the other night that was, I think, at like just west of Troost on, I think, 53rd Bravado, or I can't remember the name of it.
Okay, Bravo.
And it was, something like that. It was super cool. I mean, it had the coolest vibe. So I tell my friends about the great food here. Then you look at the music scene. And if you hit some of the places for some great music, you're going to get some fantastic music, live entertainment, which is awesome. Then there's the architecture. The architecture is tremendous. Then you go to the arts and you go to the museums and you see all the things that they're doing. And then you do things like the river market, or you do the flea markets. I mean, there's, and I think if there was a consolidated effort to market all of those things in a comprehensive way, maybe that's something Crocs could do, that would really highlight all the amazing things that Kansas City is and what it offers. And then mostly it's the people. I mean, they say Kansas City nice. It's true. I haven't really met any really people that I'm really turned off by here. I mean, everyone's been super nice. So there's so many assets and advantages of being here and enjoying Kansas City, from the people, the art, the architecture, the food, and of course, most importantly, going back to the people again. So it's cool. I love it. I love Kansas City, and I'm very proud and happy to be here. Says a kid from West Texas that grew up in a beach town and lived all over, including Europe. I dig Kansas City.
It's fascinating to me too. We have more people coming here, it seems. I met a gentleman, you'll enjoy this. So Vadim from Moldova moved to Kansas City. He toured. I asked him, I was like, well, why Kansas City? Because that's kind of my question too, more because I just want to hear what they have to say. And he's like, I kind of had the opportunity to tour the US and I liked Kansas City. I was like, there you go.
There you
Vadim
go.
from
I have a
Moldova.
buddy. I have a buddy that bought some property here, and he's going to retire here. He's a captain on the ferries in the Bay Area. So he, those big ferries that carry 450 people. He's a captain on those ferries, and he came out here and fell in love with it. And he bought some property, investment property, that he's ultimately going to retire here. And so it says a lot. People come here, they get here for a little while and they realize, hey, I'm going to buy some property here and retire here. That's very cool.
That's fantastic. So as we kind of start to wrap up here, John, this last bit's tricky. Some podcasts ask questions. I haven't quite figured out my question yet. This is your opportunity to, like, we've kind of gone over your life and your growth moments and some of the things that brought you to Kansas City. If you were to kind of lean on, one or two things that you really want to tell people to encourage them that helped you along your way towards your dream, what would those be? Something you learned, or a book. We can grab a book or two even at this point.
I would say seek to be your most genuine self. We are constantly trying to please others. There's certain things that we see as possible goals that may be other people's goals. If you can seek to be the best version of yourself, and most importantly, your most genuine self. I was recently saw this thing about authenticity that struck me, and it just talked about how powerful authenticity is in our life. People that are really authentic, people are drawn to them, and in a way that is super powerful, because people want to be around things that are authentic. You can only really be authentic if you're comfortable, and you're comfortable in your life. Now, my faith has a lot to do with that. but it also has to do with my mission. So to answer your question, it's really be your most genuine self, be true to yourself. I mean, there's so many cliches about that. Only you know what your genuine self is. As much as I've gotten to know you a little bit, Sam, I got a little bit of a read on you. I'm an old cat. I can read people pretty well. I still have no clue. And no one has a clue about me. I'm the only one that's going to know what my genuine self is. Be your genuine self. As far as what was a tipping point for me in that? One was faith. And two was once I started being my genuine self, then opportunities, not the business opportunities. The business opportunities were happening all through my 20s and my 30s and throughout my entire life. The opportunities to find some peace. And so just be your genuine self. And know this, you can achieve anything. Anything. Nothing is out of your realm. I know there's countless stories about all these people that have achieved so many amazing things. You can achieve anything. Just don't give up and follow your dreams, follow your passions.
That's been great. Thanks, John. It's been such a blessing to have you on. I really appreciate it.
Well, Sam, thank you for inviting me. I enjoyed meeting you the very first time at the KCB2B networking event where you were kind enough to say, "Hey, come join me." You pulled me over and sat me right down next to you. And then coming again to the KCB2B networking when I had the opportunity to do coaching up and then inviting me to lunch and now inviting me on the podcast, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been great. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. Hello, everybody. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.